Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 108 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ryan Davis. I'll be your host. Sean is not joining me tonight. I'm recording Thursday night for your Friday morning listening pleasure. Sean was at Wrigley Field getting his first taste of being credentialed media at the ballpark, and he got an excellent game to do that. The Cubs beat the Cardinals tonight in the opening of the second half. We'll go over that a little bit in the first segment and look ahead at Friday's game at 1:20. Second segment, I'll bring on Evan Altman to talk to me about the game a little bit, talk about Kyle Hendricks and what's going on with him. We'll talk about Jason Hayward. And then final segment, we'll talk a little bit about a Cubs roster move that they made, a new pitcher that they brought in, and we'll at least in part answer a question from a listener. So the Cubs fell behind the Cardinals early. Kyle Hendricks ended up leaving the game after 4 2/3 innings, throwing 110 pitches, allowing 3 earned runs. He left with the bases loaded and trailing 3-1, but Brian Dunsing was able to get out of the jam by getting Dexter Fowler out. But in the bottom of the fifth, the Cubs offense finally woke up and put 5 runs across, including a big RBI single from Jason Hayward and a 2-run homer by Ian Happ to cap things. Cubs ended up winning by a score of 9-6. Cardinals kept trying to fight back, but they just never relented the lead in that game. Tomorrow's game, today, I guess, if you're listening, Friday, starts at 1:20. John Lester taking the ball against Cardinals right-hander Jack Flaherty. The young Cardinals pitcher has a 3.24 ERA in 75 innings so far this year and also has 87 strikeouts in those 75 innings. So he's generally been very good. In one career start against the Cubs, he's thrown 5 innings with 2 hits allowed and 0 earned runs. On the opposite side, John Lester, in his last 5 starts against the Cardinals, a 2.01 ERA and 4 quality starts. So all good things. So let's go ahead and wrap this quick first segment. We'll go to our second segment. I'll be joined by Evan Altman. Joining me now on segment 2 is my good friend Evan Altman of CubsInsider.com. How's it going, man?
It's good. It's another day, another dollar, or maybe not a full dollar, but definitely another day. And so I'm looking forward to a little rain in the Midwest and hitting the Cubs doubleheader on Saturday, seeing what we can get done there.
Yeah, and a Cubs victory tonight, going back up against it tomorrow. And then the doubleheader and then the finale on Sunday. I think the big thing for this series, and I talked about it a little bit on yesterday's podcast with Sean, is that the Cardinals needed this series more than the Cubs do. Because they came into this 7.5 games back of first place. The Cubs are kind of riding high on the top of the division, been playing really well, coming out of the All-Star break pretty rested. The Cardinals really needed to come in and be like 4 out of 5, like even 3 out of 5. It only moves them up to 6.5 back. That's not going to be good enough. They really needed to take this series convincingly, and now it's even harder having lost the first game.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of one of these where, when you look at a long series like this too, especially with that doubleheader in there on Saturday, and you kind of stretch this thing out. I think as much as, again, there are now not a nice number of games left. We've only got 68 left in the season for the Cubs. But, this is the kind of thing that you can really build on. And what we've seen them do in years past is come out of the gate in the second half really strong. And, again, I'm certainly not ready to bury Milwaukee yet by any stretch. But you look at how they stumbled into the break. They missed out on Manny Machado. Now they could still end up getting Brian Dozier or someone. But you look at kind of the psychological impact of, if the Cubs can go on this hot stretch right away, if the Brewers maybe fumble around a little bit because they're going to have to play the Dodgers again with Machado, how does that impact them? So I think the Cubs, more so than just trying to beat the Cardinals, could really put themselves in a really, really good position in the Central out of this 5 games. And again, they could essentially bury St. Louis at the same time.
Yeah, and I mean, basically, if they win 3 of 5, the Cardinals finish this 5-game set still 8.5 back, losing a game in the process. And really, that's just a nail in their coffin. I don't see how you can come back having checked off 5 of your games against the Cubs, who are in first place, and finish at 8.5 back. I don't think that's something you can come back from. So this series, in that sense, is kind of important to the Cubs to really narrow down the division to just them and the Brewers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's this, not that the Cubs lack for confidence by any stretch, but again, as we've seen, you know, since 2015, you look at their second half records and you look at what they've been able to do, and they have zero doubt that the second half belongs to them, right? That is, and they've proven it. It's not just one of these things where it's kind of made up and Joe Maddon has put this in their minds. They truly believe that, you know, not that they're trying to sandbag in the first half, but if you look at how Maddon manages the team and how they've given these guys rest and, you know, stretched out the pitchers. And again, they gave John Lester those 6 days going into his last start of the first half. You know, they're giving Quintana a really long rest coming into this next start. I mean, they kind of prime themselves up and keep themselves rested and ready for the second half. And it's at this point that they sort of step on the gas, and they're conscious of that. They know very well what they're doing. And, you know, if they can get hot, if they can really carry that, that's going to feel really good for them from a psychological standpoint. I think that does. I made the analogy the other day. The Cubs sort of feel, when you come into the second half like this, it feels like vintage Tiger Woods on Sunday with the red shirt on. You know, when everybody else on the course knew that he was just going to beat you. He was going to will himself to beat you no matter what. And that's kind of how the Cubs feel. They showed it again tonight in the, you know, in this game, depending on when you're listening to it, the Thursday game, where they got down early and yet again busted out one of those vintage big crooked numbers to take that lead back and just kept pushing their foot on the gas.
Yeah, I can't remember who got the quotes, but somebody talked to Yadier Molina about the Cubs, and he kind of commented that they look like the team that the Cardinals were, you know, maybe 15 years ago or 16 years ago, that kind of thing, where it's basically year in, year out, you know they're going to be there. So it really, the Tiger Woods thing really is kind of apt, and it kind of reminds me that, you know, this is really kind of making a stretch, but the way you know, teams looked at Michael Jordan when he came in, that guy was going to give you everything he had, and in the end he was most likely going to beat you. Now the Cubs are not Michael Jordan, but they are kind of that same way, where you're right, they do turn it on in the second half. They keep pace in the first half, at least they have the last 2 years. They keep right with you, and then in the second half they really grind. And you know, you mentioned a lot about the way they've rested their starting pitchers. I feel like we should talk a little bit about today's game. Kyle Hendricks looked more like Kyle Hendricks of 2 weeks ago than he did of Kyle Hendricks in San Diego. I'm not quite sure yet how worried to be about him. I've tried to lean on the side of not worried because he's Kyle Hendricks and he kind of does this and he figures it out. But especially early in the game, he was missing where Victor Caratini was calling for the ball. He was missing that spot by like 6 to 8 inches, you know, pretty regularly. And he can't do that.
Yeah, and I, you know, it was interesting because he talked about that, you know, after that San Francisco start, and he kind of alluded to his mechanics and how he was working on some things. And Jim Hickey was on with Barry Rosner and Joe Ostrowski on there, standing in for Mully and Hanley, and he talked about how the problem that was going on with Hendricks was he was collapsing on his back leg a little bit. He was kind of sitting down on that back leg. And it kind of makes sense because when you look at when Hendricks has had his worst problems throughout the year, he wasn't locating the sinker properly. He was leaving it up in the zone. It was getting tagged for home runs. We saw that at least with that second run that he gave up. I think now I admittedly, I was having to listen to the game on the radio, so I was not watching to see any of those mechanical flaws, to see whether or not any of that was going on. I know the first inning, he kind of got stung by, you know, it's a little bit of BABIP luck. But, you know, in general, though, I mean, he's giving up more contact, more hits, more fly balls. And that is a little bit worrisome. Again, when you have a guy who, particularly in this position, you know, coming in early, short break, with the doubleheader on Saturday, as I keep mentioning, you really would have loved to have seen him go out there and pitch 7-8 innings, you know, have another San Francisco start to really shore that bullpen, especially with Brandon Morrow going to the DL. So there's a lot of little factors there, and I'm with you. I love what I saw, obviously, in that San Francisco start, and that's what he can be. But can he get into that groove and stay there consistently? And I'm not really convinced at this point that he can long term, at least this season. You know, he still got it. Can he keep doing that every 5 days though?
Yeah, and really that's the big question is will he get into that kind of stretch like he did last year? He struggled for a portion where he kind of got out of his mechanics. His release point went too high. His velocity on his fastball went down. Then he figured it out and then went on a second half run. The question is, will he do that again? And that's something we can't answer. But yeah, if for somebody who listened on the radio, I was watching on TV for the majority of the game. And yeah, I made a point of watching from basically when I turned it on. I want to see comparing in my mind where Victor Caratini is calling for a ball and where that ball ends up. And man, I mean, Hendricks, for especially the first three innings, was just missing like crazy. And you know, the result was a lot of three ball counts. It was, you know, 3-1, 3-2 on a lot of hitters. And the part that worries me is the Cardinals went out there with a game plan that was very intelligent. They did not swing until they absolutely had to. They made Hendricks work and throw 110 pitches to get through 4 2/3 innings because they did not swing. They made him work, and he really wasn't around the zone. He wasn't able to get those pitches in the zone like he normally does. So it not only is it a problem for Hendricks, but the Cardinals noticed it too, and they game planned around it.
Yeah, I wonder if that had anything to do with Mike Matheny not being around anymore. Because that feels like not a Matheny-ish thing.
Yeah. An intelligent game plan. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. which is like the worst thing, you know, I think as much as it was one of those moves where you're kind of like, yay, because I think we had seen so many things with Matheny lately where you're just like, my God, how is this guy still around? Like, he's a dinosaur. But then at the same time, you're like, wait a minute, don't fire him. Like, Cubs fans want to keep this guy around. Stay there. So I
think it's funny that one of the most antiquated managers in the game was also one of the youngest.
Well, yeah,
he's not that old,
right? I mean, he's not, you know, when you think about it, but at the same time, it's like he is, I mean, absolutely that kind of stereotypical, unwritten rules, old school guy, and like not just in the sense of like you look at a guy like Clint Hurdle who feels kind of old anyway. Mm-hmm. But you know, Hurdle, like, you kind of get it, but Matheny was almost like a caricature of that, to where like he took it and amped it up and just like he bathed in the, you know, in the salty tears of, I don't know what, you know, the old school guys who were bemoaning Javi Baez and things like that. Like he just relished that stuff, as we saw with the whole, that Bud Norris mess with Jordan Hicks, and just the things that he was saying, like, dude, you're public, you're making these statements to a reporter, really? Like, you're gonna own this?
And then they tried to throw Mark Saxon under the bus for all of that, which was even worse. I mean, it was bad optics all around.
Yeah, it was just it was a very strange, and then, you know, and that was right after Saxon had written the piece about Dexter Fowler as well.
Yeah,
right, where you got some of those quotes. So, you know, not to take this too far afield by any stretch, but I was interested to see how that might play coming into the second half. You know, would that change the way the Cardinals go about their business here, at least in the near term? And would that be one of those things where they'd kind of be energized by this move and come out swinging, which they did. Obviously, the Cubs overcame that in this first game. But I think that's definitely something to look at, is how is that team managed, and how do they perform under that with different leadership moving forward?
Yeah, and I think a really good example of you know, different leadership is when I looked at the Cardinals lineup today. I thought, this is the first intelligently constructed Cardinals lineup I've seen in a long time, with, you know, Carpenter at the top where he normally is. I like Molina second with the season he's having. Paul DeJong third. Mike Matheny had this big issue where he was constantly batting Paul DeJong sixth or seventh in his lineup, you know, even after the breakout year he had last year. I get that part of this year he was hurt and all that, but you know, this is a good young, one of your best young talented hitters that you're trying to develop. This is a guy you should be putting in the number three or number four spot, and Matheny just so consistently did not do it. And so when I looked at the lineup for today, I was kind of like, yeah, this is a big change for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of one of those things, you know, those are certain things I think we're so quick, and we kind of, in the generic sense, to kind of put a lot of a team's performance on a manager, a hitting coach, a pitching coach, you know, when in reality, so much of that is outside of their real control. But when it comes to things like lineup construction, like game planning, and that's where, you know, I think A-Rod was kind of out there kind of clamoring for, you know, keeping a set lineup and doing all this. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's neat, I guess. You know, if you have a very clear eight guys or an American League nine who are going to essentially be everyday players. But when you've got a team like the Cubs with so much versatility and they've got multiple switch hitters, several guys who can play multiple positions, and then you're talking about the matchups on a given day with a given pitcher and field conditions and everything else, it really doesn't make sense to run the same lineup out there and construct it the same way every time. That it's actually really dumb. And I get that players, you know, again, there are certain things that are good about having a routine and kind of knowing where you're batting and having that sense of familiarity. But at the same time, I mean, I think we can look at it and see, well, let's see who's the best offense in the National League, despite having some guys who, you know, are really having the two best hitters on the team really having a down year for them, relatively speaking. I don't think you can really look at it and be like, oh man, Joe Maddon tinkering with the lineup, boy, that's screwing him up. Like, right. I don't know.
And you bring up A-Rod, and I've always kind of enjoyed listening to him talk on the broadcast because I feel like he's fairly natural and the personality comes out in a good way versus kind of the way he was viewed leading up to his retirement. I feel like he made a very quick 180 in public perception of him joining the broadcast booth. But before, I've noticed it, and especially tonight, you want to talk about antiquated views on the game. I mean, the thing you were talking about, trying to have the set lineup, when they went to that break, both he and Jessica Mendoza talking to players who might say, yeah, I'm in a 1-for-20 slump, but over that period, my exit velocity is 102, so I'm pretty good. And they're like, yeah, but you're 1-for-20. It's like, but process over result, man. You know, if you're 1-for-20 and you're hitting the ball hard, that means you're doing everything right, and it's kind of just that part of the game where you can't really control it. So, like, hearing them both talk about that in the booth, it's just like, it's cringeworthy.
Yeah, there was something else that I heard from A-Rod where I was like, wait, are you really? Are we, is this a thing that we're discussing? Which, you know, again, is, and listen, I'm totally aware of the fact that ball players view things, and it was kind of, there was the thing with the Athletic, the poll they took of players, and Javi Baez is one of them who's most overrated. But the explanation the player gave was more about like, well, he does stuff and makes us look dumb because it's stuff that most other people wouldn't do and fans love it. And I'd love watching it if I was a fan, but I'm a player. And essentially the guy was like, well, he makes me jealous, so I hate him and he's overrated. But players view the game differently from fans. And I think sometimes to the extent that they'll sort of forget about some of the nuances of it that makes sense. You know, they maybe don't look at it. And again, but for someone who's generally been as intelligent and well-spoken about it as A-Rod, it was a little bit of a surprise. But there again, there's certain things that you're just going to get that somebody's kind of got this notion in their mind and they're going to run with it. And, you know, you can't really do anything but shrug your shoulders and just move on to the next.
Yeah. I don't want to hang too much on this second segment. We've got a couple good things to talk about for the third segment. But last thing I wanted to put out here, Jason Hayward, they talked a lot about him tonight. 3-for-5 at the plate, a couple of huge hits, a big steal of second base when Tyler Lyons wasn't really paying attention to him over at first. Coming into tonight's game, his last 192 plate appearances, which reaches back to his return from the DL on May 18th, before tonight's 3-for-5, he had 316 batting average, 361 on base, 480 slugging. I try and bring up every opportunity to praise what's going on with him because it's been so unbelievable, and it's possibly the first number one best storyline from the first half of the season. Maybe that's Baez, but it's probably the number two best storyline for the Cubs.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I mean, you look at all this stuff out there, and I think, you know, people have kind of asked all along this, you know, ever since he really started turning it on. You know, I certainly wasn't the first, right, to pick up on some of the things he was doing better and how his peripherals had improved to the point where kind of like what you had mentioned, right? 1-for-20, but things are moving in the right direction. You're hitting the ball hard.
That's a great example.
Yeah. And
it was from the beginning of the season. This wasn't something that just happened in the middle of May. He was doing all these same things at the beginning of this season, even when he was struggling. So that's a perfect example of what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it started to pay dividends. And then when you look at him, and again, and this is where, again, we get away from the stats, and he looks more comfortable and confident in the box with his swing. The mechanics look better. I mean, everything just looks smoother about it. Whereas you could tell, I mean, I want to say the anxiety, maybe that's the wrong way to put it, but radiating off of him in the past. It was just like, it was gross to watch at times.
Yeah.
How bad that swing was. And he's done a 180 and it's awesome. And he's such a good dude, and you can't help but be happy for all the crap that he's put up with the last two seasons to now kind of shovel that back on some people. And it's pretty cool.
I would even go as far as to say, how many other players on the roster right now, as of today, and I'm not saying like in October or in the past, but you know, if there's a player coming up in a tie game in, like, let's say the eighth inning with a runner on second and, you know, two out, is there anybody else on the team you would rather see at the plate than Jason Hayward? I think you might be able to make an argument for Baez, but there's a much higher chance that he's going to end up swinging from his shoes and striking out, whereas Hayward makes so much contact, and it's a great plate appearance every time.
Yeah, and between he and Zobrist batting like that, you know, together in the order like that, and Zobrist, another guy who I had kind of left for dead after last season, you know, and I've been on record, I've said it, even if he was healthy, I didn't think a 37-year-old was going to come back out there after the season that he had and do what he's doing. But this could, he's on pace to certainly have his best season as a Cub, maybe not ever, but as a Cub at least. And so to have both of these guys, both of whom are always going to put together a really professional at bat. And as you mentioned, Hayward got the hit, got the steal. Who drove him in? Ben Zobrist, right? I mean, you got these two guys both doing it, and it's just been so refreshing to see that consistently. When you know, so that, and that leads you to believe, like, gosh, if KB gets it back together and gets healthy, and Rizzo starts doing it, this is, I mean, you talk about a really, really formidable lineup. So, and they're just fun to watch, which is not what we saw necessarily all the way through at least the first couple months of the season.
Yeah. All right. Let's end on the second segment there. We have a question from someone on Twitter and a transaction to talk about for our third segment. So let's lead with this question. At Big Ben Casey on Twitter asks, do the Cubs have to make a move to keep pace with the Dodgers' acquisition of Manny Machado in the arms race for the National League title? If so, what would you suggest, and is it feasible? My suggestion is that the Cubs trade a minor league pitcher to the Texas Rangers in exchange for reliever Jesse Chavez. What do you think?
You know, I think that is, I actually think that's a really good move. And in fact, I'm going to call Jed Hoyer right now and suggest that he make that move like 30 minutes ago.
Yeah. Now, everyone should know we recorded this before the game. We predicted everything that was going to happen, and we're predicting that move to happen as well. So if it happens, we totally called it. But no, that's according to Ken Rosenthal, that is the move. The Cubs sent a minor league pitcher that we do not know the name of.
Ricky Tyler Thomas.
Oh, okay, there you go. Guy that probably most people haven't even heard of. So, you know, take that for what it is. But Jesse Chavez, 34, I think, 34 years old, 56 and a third innings this season, which is a lot for a guy who has been just a reliever. He's made appearances in 30 games, so he goes multiple innings. It's been kind of hit and miss, a 3.51 ERA. He does strike out a decent amount. He has 50 strikeouts. He's walked less than two batters per nine innings. He gives up some hits. He gives up home runs. There's 10 home runs allowed. It just seems like a depth move. I mean, he's going to be on the big league roster, I'm sure, but it just seems like kind of a long reliever, a guy who can come in and clean up a few innings for you, because really the Cubs at this point, they need guys who can come in and eat innings.
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing, you know, and I don't want to call this a precursor or just kind of, but it is a move for a guy who, Again, we're several months removed from last season and in the postmortem. But as we heard from Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer time and time again, was they wanted to add proven strike throwers to the bullpen. And with a 1.92, I believe, BB per nine, he's a guy. And consistently, you know, even – and that's as a reliever, which, you know, sometimes – in those short stints, you walk a couple guys, and that can really inflate that number. So he really doesn't walk anybody. And depending on, I don't know what he's supposedly going to make his debut this weekend. So I don't know necessarily who will go down. I know Anthony Bass. You know, maybe there's a couple others perhaps in the mix there. But Bass is another one who had been pitching for him for a while and really went a long time without walking guys. They've had some others. You know, Justin Wilson has really cut those walks down. And they've done a really good job, a better job. And early on, it didn't look that way. But as the season has progressed, some of the guys they brought in have just not walked. And I think, you know this sounds crazy. Like, I'd rather see a reliever come in and give up a home run than walk two guys, to be quite honest. I know that maybe sounds weird to some people, but this is the kind of guy that he won't hurt you. At least he's going to make people beat him. In other words, he's not going to beat himself. So interesting pickup for sure.
Yeah, and really looking, I feel like there's one number that tells kind of the story of how he was used in Texas, other than 56 in the third innings in 30 appearances, which tells you he's almost going two innings every time out. In his 30 appearances, 15 games finished, one save. So he's coming in and mop up duty in the late innings, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, certainly I don't want to look past anything or try to speculate anything. But obviously, with some of the rumors going around, you kind of wonder with a guy like a Montgomery, or you look at, you know, that's kind of a, I don't even want to call it, it's not even a Dunsing role because he wasn't really a multi inning guy. But they have, at least since Montgomery moved into the rotation, they've sort of lacked that. Unless you want to look at like Luke Farrell, you know, but a consistent kind of that guy who can go out there and give you those two innings. And I think particularly knowing for the 15th time, I think that I've mentioned the doubleheader coming up, you know, it's certainly for beyond that, but that's a guy that you might very much need to lean on here this weekend with these games coming up. And certainly I think the Cubs played 12 games in 11 days, I think, to open this second half. So having a kind of a long man out of the bullpen is definitely going to be something they're going to have to use.
You can actually stretch it further. I think it's 21 games in 20 days, which is that's brutal. That's the big thing that has had me a little scared about the Cubs in the second half. I think they're going to take off just fine, but really what you're looking at is, are they going to run out of gas in the playoffs? Because that's kind of what happened in the NLCS last year. And you can't really predict how that'll all shake out at this point, but yeah, all those games in the second half, the 21 games in 20 days, the fact that they only have six off days the rest of the season, that's just all kind of uncomfortable at this point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, even though they've come out and said that, you know, they expect this deal with Brandon Morrow to be no big deal, that he should be fine very shortly, you know, kind of a minimal stay again. But, you know, second trip to the DL.
Third injury, really.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's – I think I heard he was taking his shirt off too fast or something and hurt his arm, or I don't know how that worked.
He was playing Mario Kart and slipped on a banana peel, I
think. That seems like something Randall Sanders would have a gif for, or a meme of some sort.
But I don't know if Randall listened to – but if he does listen to this, I want that tomorrow.
But you know, it's obviously they're kind of in this position where they need to, and of course, you know, we're seeing them mentioned in connection with, you know, some other relievers out there, certainly not Brad Hand, who was already traded for what I thought was a pretty low return, all things considered, with what they'd asked. But anyway, beside the point, the Cubs definitely need to load up on as much depth as they possibly can. And I think not just for right now. And as you mentioned, here immediately and through the rest of the second half is one thing, but then getting some guys who can garner Joe Maddon's trust so that he doesn't get to the point where he's got, you know, his four starters and then like two relievers that he's comfortable using in the playoffs, which we've seen, you know, and not just last year, but we saw that in the World Series run, right? Where it's basically like, you know, It's we're gonna ride Aroldis Chapman for like five innings if we have to. you just go out there and you just keep throwing till your arm falls off.
Which it practically did.
Right, which it very nearly did. And then, you know, he rode Wade Davis really hard, but he doesn't have, at least from the closer spot, from those guys who have those high leverage innings, he doesn't have those guys who are just on that short term deal who the Cubs knew they weren't really gonna pursue again the following year, and they could just wear him out. Like, Morrow is going to be back next year, and obviously he's already been injured, so you need to they're going to ease off of that. They need some of those guys to fill some of those spots, get them in there. It's nice to have Wilson picking up and pitching like the guy they thought they were going to get last year, but again, you cannot have too many arms this time of the year, and I think they're going to continue to try to cycle some of those guys through and pick up some more guys that, again, they can go out there, be durable, and show up and make some appearances.
Yeah, I will say, to finish on this part, on Jesse Chavez, I would say like B plus, A minus move, but on the scale of 1 to 10, how excited it makes me, it's probably a 4. So just a smart, solid move for a guy who can eat innings, because that's really what the bullpen needs, is guys who can eat innings so that you don't have to run out, you know, CJ Edwards or Pedro Strop or all these important guys, Steve Cishek, don't have to run all those guys out there in every important situation.
Yeah. And that's, I think the best thing. It's always, always good, you know, cause it feels like it's the same three guys every time. And I know they cycled some other guys through there, and yeah. So this is a solid move. Like I said, it's not exciting on any level. I would be surprised. I think there are probably some folks who are legitimately excited about it, but I think at the end of the day, he's a dude. He can come in here, be solid, and that's all. That's kind of what you want. You want some boring guys who are just going to come in there, get some outs, and move on.
He's veteran Luke Farrell.
Absolutely.
Before we close, I'm just going to run down the updated NL Central standings. The Cubs have their biggest lead in the division this season right now, 3 games up on the Brewers. They are 56-38. Milwaukee is 55-43. The Cardinals dropped to 48-47 and now 8.5 back. The Pirates are 48-49 and 9 back, while the Reds are 43-53 and 13.5 games back. Thank you for joining me, man. I appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you, especially on for some reason it feels like a Sunday night. I don't know why. Maybe it's because the Cubs are on ESPN playing the Cardinals. But thank you for joining me on a Thursday evening to talk baseball so we can put out a quality podcast.
Absolutely. Always happy to.
And that's it for episode 108 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thanks again for listening. We will talk to you guys next week.